Hour number two of Riddle and the Reporter, Junior Riddle, Nick Keyser, live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. You can watch the streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single Saturday from 9 to 11. You can also use those streaming platforms for all of our day shows from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. And I don't know if you listened yesterday, Nick, but I loved the Paul Kaharsky and Robbie and Rexroad collaboration in the afternoons. I thought it was a little bit of a change of pace. Thought it sounded good. Thought the guys did a great job. Was it odd for you not having Robbie and Joe in the morning instead of in chasing Big Joe in there?
Very much so. Did you see the GIF I tweeted yesterday afternoon?
No, I didn't.
Missing out. It was Squidward in his house looking outside, seeing Patrick and SpongeBob running around. So I had to have fun with the guys a little bit yesterday, tell them that I missed having them, you know, part of my daily routine. But they were in the afternoon. I was blessed to have Chase McCabe and Big Joe yesterday morning for 5 hours. They were on the air. I was still there for 3 hours.
And below. You know they were in a good mood because they're about to go to the beach.
Yeah, they're going to Miami. So they're already down there now. So yeah, I had them jazzed up for that. I've not produced anything for Chase in a long time. It's usually Nick Frazier. Dr. Crane is what they usually call him. We need to give Connor a nickname. I think that would be fun as well.
Please
but
don't.
Maybe so. Please. You kind of deserve one at this point because you're like a little brother.
What are those like blow up dolls that you punch and they like wobble back and forth?
I thought you were going to go somewhere else there. No. Be careful.
No.
Golly.
That's a family show. That has more to do of your thought process than mine.
I'm talking
about a child's toy here. You're talking about more of an adult toy. Yeah, but either way, we're not going to get into that. Either way,
call him like a hockey nickname would be like Nootsie.
Nootsie?
What's up, Nootsie?
Nootsie.
No, not really.
That's so Canadian.
I don't like it.
Well, that's why. We are talking hockey, so we'll see how this weekend goes. But we're not going to make it stick, but anyway.
Yeah,
so.
We are talking Nashville Predators. The team is really starting to hit a stride. You put a stat in there. Has it been they've won 8 out of their last 10?
Yeah, they're 8-2-0 in their last 10 now.
That is fantastic. Yeah. So the Nashville Predators got a huge win the other night, Star Wars night, which I completely nerded out on. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I saw
you
tweet out a photo of Boba Fett.
So yeah,
there you go.
So big fan of that. And then they also got a marquee win against a pretty good Tampa Bay Lightning team.
Yes,
so
they did.
What have been some of your takeaways the last couple weeks from this team? What have they been improving on? What are some things that are still kind of the same? And also, starting to get a little bit healthy. Tommy Novak back in the lineup. That's my guy, Tommy Novak.
I think the last little bit here, they've been a confident group, but they've also been getting healthier, which is a really good sign to what this team could be. But also the fact that they had success without guys like Tommy Novak, Cody Glass, and even Luke Shen for a good chunk of time as well. The Predators were still thriving. And so yesterday you see Spencer Stastny get assigned to the Milwaukee Admirals, and also Liam Foudy, he went through waivers and he made it through. So good to see that. Got a little love from Elliot Friedman there as well, which is good. He's a friend of the show here on the Midday with Caroline, Willie, and Derek. And so, look, it was fun to see that the Preds, they've decided that they're not going to waver from playing relentless hockey. And that was way back to the offseason, right?
Yeah.
They said, we're going to come in this year. We're going to implement, you know, Andrew's system. And to Andrew's benefit, it's been phenomenal hockey to watch. It's been really tiresome to watch them play. They played a lot of hockey lately as well. But it's been really refreshing to see how this group has responded to adversity at times, because I feel like it's so easy to roll over when things get hard sometimes and things are mentally and physically stressing you out. And so this group, Junie, to their credit, they've done really well handling that.
No, and all in all, I think just them kind of falling into the scheme of things and starting to really get a rhythm with a more offensive-centric, you know, being a more offensive-centric team,
right.
I think has been crucial for them. But Tommy Novak coming back.
Yeah.
You know, he jumped off to a really, really hot start. Having him come back, Cody Glass should be returning anytime soon now? When is he expected to come back?
So he was missing time with an upper body injury. He got hit in the shoulder with Josh Manson back when Ryan Johansson returned to Nashville for the first time since being traded over there.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the fact that Foodie went on waivers and then you had Spencer go back to Milwaukee, that's an indication that Cody's with the team this weekend.
Yeah.
Not saying he's going to play today whatsoever, but we'll
see. The options out there.
We'll see if he does return this weekend. And he was skating with the group. That was something that was encouraging to me. Tommy Novak hadn't skated at all since he got hurt, and he was on the ice Thursday before the game. So, I mean, I thought maybe Cody would have played that night, but he didn't. So that's been the biggest storyline for me is, when will Cody come back now that Tommy has dressed in one of the games? You know, Tommy was playing on a line with Yusso Parsonen and Luke Evangelista, so we might end up seeing the Parsonen will have to be moved around. Glass will be, you know, put in there somewhere, right?
So yeah.
That's going to be an interesting combination to kind of think about. But I would anticipate Cody playing one or both of these games this weekend, I would say.
So some of the takeaways that I've gotten from the last couple games is the young guys that we were having some question marks about. You know, Phil Tomasino, he's had a lot of good scoring chances.
Absolutely.
The last. And has he capitalized on most of them? No, he has not. But I like the fact that he's getting into the mix, taking some chances, putting the puck on net, and, you know, starting to find his role a little bit in this offense.
Yep.
Yusso Parsonen is another guy. He has been ultra aggressive, putting the puck in the net a couple times in the past couple games, you know, being much more active in this offense. These are crucial players that are helping this.
Oh, yeah.
And a huge surprise for me this year has been Gus Nyquist. And again, is he going to be the guy that you're highlighting on the first line? No, he's not, because Ryan O'Reilly and Philip Forsberg are having great years.
Right, but Gus.
But he is filling an excellent role on that line that is, one, not getting talked about enough, and number two, that has really been that final piece on that line that, although he's not your stereotypical first liner, which was a concern for me, he's come out there and he's played excellent with those two guys.
Yeah, and think about it this way, too. The way that the Predators looked at signing both Ryan O'Reilly and Gus Nyquist was, we know what they've done, and it's been about their reputation a little bit, but they're both guys that are in their 30s. You know, Gus is 34, and he just went on an 8-game point streak. You know, that was something that he hadn't done in over 5 years, Junie. So when you have a guy that is acclimated to a team that where he can play with Philip Forsberg, Ryan O'Reilly, and to those guys' credit, playing with Gus, that's just chemistry. That's just, hey, I'm seeing you all over the ice. And also, Philip Forsberg has arguably been a top five scorer just in terms of talent this year. He's been phenomenal. I mean, Philbuary is usually what they call it, but he has been on a tear the first 2 months of the season. And so I would anticipate Gus continuing to perform really well. He has 18 points in 26 games this year, Junie. And so I think that power play has been everything that they've needed for a long time. And Gus, from his days playing with the Red Wings, you know, he played with the Magic Man, you know, or the Magician and Pavel Datsyuk. He also played with guys like Henrik Zetterberg, and, you know, Nick Lidstrom was back on defense there as well toward his, you know, end of his time in Detroit. But I think that the Preds looked at Gus and they knew, okay, Gus, you know what it takes to play with really talented players. I'm talking some of the best in the world. So that's what this lineup's done. And then you talked about Phil Tomasino. You know, he's been a guy that hasn't buried the chances. He's had some big gimmies that he's missed on. So it's been tough to see him, you know, kind of miss the net. But he's been their quote-unquote kid. He is the kid for Michael McCarron and Cole Smith. So it's fun to see that Philip Tomasino has, you know, come into his own role now, Junie.
So right now the Preds are fifth in the Central Division. They are also the second wild card at this moment in time. They are tied with the Arizona Coyotes, sitting with 28 points. And I think the only reason the Coyotes are ahead of the Predators right now is because of that head-to-head.
Yes.
And they also have a significant goal differential as well. So the Preds are sitting there right there in a playoff spot. I think they're going to be competing for that wild card spot all season long. But what question comes to mind when I'm thinking about where the Preds are right now is, how better off would they be if UC Soros was kind of having more of a UC Soros year, because I feel like he's come off to a rough start.
Right.
And he just got his first steal of the season
yes.
a few games ago.
Yep.
And last year he had 14 of those.
Right.
And so they were coming at a much higher rate.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is going on with UC Soros? Do you expect him to get better throughout the season? And if he does start to come on like we've seen mm-hmm. the past couple of years, mm-hmm. what do you think the ceiling for this Predators team is?
Well, the ceiling would be a playoff team.
Yes.
I think that's the easy answer.
A playoff team that can, you know,
quietly
be one and
be
done or maybe win a series.
I mean, I'm not going to go ahead and say win a series. I think they would be a good first-round team for sure. Now, I think if they went to the playoffs now, they'd play Vegas, I think is who they would play. So, look, you never know what that Vegas team would look like necessarily. It could be a whole Chicago Blackhawks story where you beat them in as many games as you need to win, which is four. So, not saying that that's going to happen. That's way too early to even talk about. Wouldn't say that it would happen right now because Vegas is really talented. But,
yeah.
Look, I was talking about this with Willie yesterday. I was texting him some, and I asked him if, you know, hey, after that steal, did he get another one the other night against the you know, Lightning? And no, he obviously didn't, but I just kind of wanted to figure out what it took to maybe get counted for a steal. And so one thing he pointed out to me was that the Predators were expected to have four. They had four expected goals against, yet they won 5-1. So that told me Soros played our damn good hockey game.
Yes.
So if he's going to continue to put that out there and just be a great guy, which we all know that he can be on the ice, then the Predators' ceiling is huge compared to where maybe people had them to start the season. So the expectation for him has been to be a great goalie. Now, I did this, and really, really fast here, I'll kind of go through this. So I looked at UC Soros's first 20 games ever since 2018, which is kind of when he came over as the starter for the Nashville Predators, and Pekka was still with the Preds as well. One thing I found interesting was that through 20 starts, he's only gotten to double-digit wins, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 times, which isn't horrible, but also when you take a look at his goals against and his save percentage, he's only been, I think, below that. He's been above 3 more than you would like him to. But I think for him, he's had slow starts. We know that. Now, this year, I think it's taken more time for him because of a new system. So you have to give him credit for just how he's handled it. And so I don't know if he's going to play tonight, but I would anticipate seeing Kevin Lankinen in more often, because if you get a guy in a groove and Kevin can be in a groove kind of at the same time, that might bode well for the Predators. And so I'm kind of curious to see who I end up seeing who's first off the ice for the Predators. I'm hearing it will probably be Kevin because of some folks I've been talking to in Toronto that are at morning skate right now. But I would anticipate seeing a good weekend from both of these guys. So the Preds are on a roll, and there's a lot to be excited about, Junie.
Absolutely. Like you said, Preds are rolling. They're playing good, 14-12 on the season. Currently sitting in a wild card spot. They play the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight at 6 p.m. Pregame is going to be at 5 with Max Herz. They got another game in Canada playing the Canadiens tomorrow at 6 as well. And then they come back to Bridgestone Arena to take on the Flyers on Tuesday at 7 p.m. So always tune in an hour early with Max Herz for the pregame show. He's always giving away some tickets, so if you get a part of that, you might get a chance to go to a game. So all in all, big stuff for the Preds. But coming up next, this might be a little bit of old news, but I got to talk about this. I want to talk about college football and the college football playoff. Did the committee get it right putting in Alabama over Florida State? I got some hefty opinions on this and about college football in general. We are going to discuss that coming up next. You're listening to Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Intergalactic, 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 intergalactic Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason at Twin Peaks in Madison this Monday from 4 to 6 p.m. for our NFL pregame show. They'll break down the Titans' Week 14 matchup against the Miami Dolphins and give you the latest updates before the game. Our NFL pregame show is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and The Beast Unleashed. Welcome back in to Riddle and the Reporter. And I mentioned this before the break. Listen, I know this is old news, but we only get Saturday mornings to talk about what we want to talk about in the world of sports. So I want to bring it back up. College football playoffs. Number one, Michigan. Number two, Washington. Number three, Texas. Number four, Alabama. Leaving undefeated Florida State, 13-0, ACC champion, out of the college football playoffs. Now, I have my opinions about this. I feel very strongly about this. And I think Florida State got royally screwed in all of this. How can you have a Power 5 conference champion that did everything right, that won all of their games, looked like one of the best college football teams in the land, had an elite defense, and then they miss out? They miss out undefeated. That completely, in my opinion, invalidates the ACC entirely as a conference. And I would sit here and argue with you, the ACC is not even the worst Power 5 conference in the nation. Listen, outside of Ohio State and Michigan, the Big Ten is awful. The Big Ten is terrible, and nobody talks about it. Nobody talks about how the Big Ten is terrible. They just keep hyping it up because of some of the big-name programs that are in there. I think the ACC, from top to bottom, is a better college football conference than the Big Ten right now.
I would say so. I think we have an interesting text to kind of take a look at as well. I will let you get to it as well. It's from a 206. So I find that the way that they've gone about voting about this every single year, it's tough not to look at, you know, ever since that they've done the college football playoff. I think it's, what year is this, 11 or 12 that they've done this, something like that. But I know that Alabama's now made it 7 years now. 7 years. And so I'm not saying to leave them out because of how many times they've been in. In the eyes of the committee, they've deserved to be in, right? So that makes sense. But when you leave out a 13-0 team, there has to be really good cause for concern. Now, to be in their shoes, they're looking at it as, and this is what they might be thinking. This is not how I would feel, and I'll tell you how I feel about it as well, really fast. But the way that the committee would look at this is, you lost your quarterback, you have had some tough games this year, but you've remained undefeated. And the way that we see it is, the brand of football that you play, we just don't think it matches up against any of the other three teams that are going to be in the college football playoff, which is ridiculous if you ask me. They were a team that proved time and time again, even through adversity, that they would prevail, that they would win, because they went and had a great undefeated season. That's a shame that they did not get more consideration. Now, if the vote was closer, I think we'd still have all this big hoopla about it. Junie, to me, I understand. I do understand. Am I frustrated for FSU? Absolutely. I have friends that love FSU, that are great fans for them, and they have told me to go on a tirade to talk about how this just entire committee has made a huge, huge mistake by leaving them out. And I think it's a mistake leaving them out, but I do understand why they leave them out. And it is that, hey, you've been battered lately. We don't think you belong in this competitive edge part of the season, which is ridiculous, but that's probably the way that they look at it, honestly.
And what's so hypocritical to me is that a lot of the crowd that is being like, well, Bama was the best team, they deserve to get in. Listen, I'm not going to argue with you about this.
Yeah.
That if you're asking me at the current moment in time who's the better team, Alabama or Florida State, I would lean towards Alabama in the trajectory. But that same crowd – are the ones that are saying every game matters. The expansion of the playoff is stupid. It's going to take away from the validity on Saturdays that, you know, if a team loses, they're out. Listen, it's the same crowd that's saying that. And again, Alabama lost at home by double digits. Florida State did not. And Florida State beat two SEC schools. They scheduled number 5 LSU to begin the year and absolutely mollywopped them. They went into the swamp against a Florida team. And again, now granted, is Florida good? No, but it's still one of the toughest places to play in all of college football. And with their backup quarterback in his first start of the year, they won the game. And they go into the ACC title game with a true freshman quarterback that had only thrown 4 passes all season long against a really stout Louisville front 7, and they still won the game when all the money was going towards Louisville. Right. Everybody was betting towards Louisville, and that line moved from like a touchdown favorite for Florida State all the way to I think they were only favored by 1 point.
Something like
at
that.
At kickoff. It doesn't matter. Here's the point of all this. It's just like you got to be on one side or the other. I'm so sick of the hypocrisy of people saying the expansion of the playoffs, it's so unnecessary. It's just going to cause more blowouts and all. Like I'm just so sick of it. I'm just so sick of it. FSU, the way their defense was playing, I felt like that they could go in and disrupt a really good Michigan because Michigan's offense isn't as good enough. If FSU played the way they play defense against Louisville, tell me with their backup quarterback that they wouldn't have had an opportunity to win that game.
Yeah.
You can't convince me that they couldn't.
Right, and then, Michigan's got the whole headline with Jim Harbaugh, how they're America's team, and, dude, whatever. Just leave that alone. But the whole entire premise of having the college football playoff is, yeah, you want to have the 4 best teams, but the committee probably looks at it as, okay, who are the 4 that we have right now, like, at in this moment right now that we feel like could maybe make this interesting. And so I don't know. I felt like when the whole Michigan thing went down, I'm not putting blame on the whole, Connor Stallions thing in Michigan, but I think that whoever is with Michigan or has affiliation with Michigan and that votes on this committee needed nothing to do with this voting. And I'm not saying that it's going to be a problem, but I think that when you look at the college football playoff moving forward, you're obviously not going to have the 4-team playoff ever again. So how do you improve on that? I think if anything, there could be more issues next year because then you're going to talk about teams that, oh, well, things are kind of close for, Liberty. Liberty had a great season, and their coach is talking about, man, if this was the 12 team, then they would be looking great.
They would be that mid-major program that would get in. But I'm not, like, crying over the 13th and 14th ranked team because more than likely they're not going to have a legitimate shot.
Yeah.
For me, I look at this and the precedent that it sets – I don't like it. Just completely delegitimize an entire Power 5 conference. And when, it's just like, it was just justice for me. I feel like the SEC bringing in Oklahoma and Texas just completely changed and flipped college football on its head. That's why we have all these, West Coast teams coming to the Big Ten. Like, it's just completely ruining the sport in general. Yeah. And when it comes down to it, I feel like there needs to be at least 4 conferences, 4 really good, Power 4 now that there's going to be no Pac-12. And now that you completely delegitimize the ACC and the ACC champion, it's like if you're a recruit and you're like, oh, I could either go to Missouri or NC State. Let's just say 2 average teams from both conferences. You're going to go to the SEC because you're going to know you're going to have a better shot at postseason play. So congratulations, college football.
You
completely delegitimized an entire conference.
I think the way that the committee can kind of get themselves out of a hole, okay, let's just put in one of the teams from the SEC. You know what? Let's just throw someone in there that we know will make some noise, obviously. Nick Saban, the storied team, someone that can come in and lead a team to victory. They're the underdog. They're number 4. They could very well win it. Anybody that's in the playoffs can win it.
Yeah, because I think Michigan's a little bit overrated. Now, I don't think Michigan's as good and dominant as people think.
I don't know why it feels eerily similar, but wasn't there a year that Ohio State was 4 and then won it all, correct?
Yes.
So it kind of feels like that, but not completely.
But with all due respect, Cardale Jones did go into his conference championship game, which, again, the Big Ten conference championship is the most BS conference, because one side of the divisions is super elite and the other side is cupcake.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
He won 59-0 against Wisconsin. Yeah. I get that argument, but again, we're talking about a quarterback that played for Florida State that wouldn't be playing in the college football playoff. That's the point that I make. I don't like it. And again, we're moving to 12 teams, so I guess it doesn't really matter. But all in all, you know, the way the SEC, in my opinion, ruined college football by making these super conferences and taking away the two best Big 12 programs out of that conference and all this realignment, they started that. I thought it was only justice that they missed the playoffs because of the precedent that they set that every Saturday matters.
So we have a text on our personal text line. I'll just read this off before we go over to CJ Taylor, because we're going to shift gears over to Vanderbilt and what was going on with them this year from a player perspective. So looking forward to that. But our old friend Joe Rex wrote, so they should have delegitimized. I've said that wrong. Delegitimized. I'm not going to say it right. I'm just going to keep saying it wrong. A 4-team playoff with 5 Power 5 conferences, which means someone will always be delegitimized. Okay. I mean, somebody's always going to be. Look, when a team's left out of the playoffs, when it's not based on a points standings, like pro sports, duh.
Patrick Mahomes goes down the final 2 weeks of the season. Let's just keep the Chiefs out of the playoffs.
There's not going to be.
They're done.
There's not like, okay, there's not a central division. There's not an Atlantic to look at.
It's so stupid to me.
Yeah, if you split up the college football landscape into an East versus a West, and then these teams made it, and then these teams made it, that would make more sense.
And FSU struggled in their conference championship against Louisville, but let's not talk about Alabama tied 3-3 with South Florida earlier in this. Let's not talk about that, because the beginning of the season doesn't matter. It's all about how you finish.
Committees sound so Southern too, doesn't it? Like, yeah, we're gonna get our sweet tea, we're gonna have a good old little barbecue, we're gonna vote on who makes the college football playoff. You know, like that just sounds like something that they would do based on how things have gone the last decade or so doing this college football playoff selection. So we're going to move on, because we have a great conversation coming up with CJ Taylor. He just finished his first year at Vanderbilt. So Junie, this should be a great perspective after a tough season, but there's optimism for sure.
Yep, CJ Taylor, one of the better players for the Vanderbilt football program, linebacker for the Commodores, will join us next. We're going to talk to him about everything going on with the team, a lot of transfers going out, and what's the future of this Vanderbilt football program under Clark Lee. We will get into that next. Riddle and the reporter, Junie Riddle, Nick Keyser here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in to Riddle and the Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. We are still trying to get a hold of Vanderbilt linebacker CJ Taylor, trying to get a hold of him, talking about the Vanderbilt football program, everything that's going on with them. But a disappointing season for the Commodores, Nick, all in all. I had a lot of high hopes for this team after they went 5-7 the year prior. They really finished strong. Beating a Kentucky team on the road, beating Anthony Richardson in Florida, here in Nashville. I mean, it was a really good end of the year last year, and then they come out this year, struggle against Hawaii. They didn't really look as dominant as I thought they should against Alabama, A&M, and then the rest of the way. I mean, they just completely bottomed out.
Yeah, I would say so, and it's not necessarily a good note to end on, for sure. But you have to be hopeful for the optimism that there is there. in the future. So while we're still waiting on CJ, just looking forward to seeing how Vanderbilt can take advantage of their quote unquote maybe off season Junie, because one thing that I've heard from Clark Lee is he's been slowly chipping away and doing the right things, and he's a bright mind. And even when John Hines made his return to Nashville, he let us know that, you know, he was kind of hanging out and, you know, he had still been around town. And previously, I mean, I'd even heard that he would hang out with Clark and stuff like that. But it's always good to know that that you've got a guy locally that cares about the product that he's trying to put out there on the field. So the type of relationship that our station even has with Vanderbilt, we hope that there is, you know, optimism for some guys coming in. You know, Joe hopped on, you know, and said earlier this week that there is a good source of maybe, you know, some good booster, you know, money coming
in. He said specifically, yeah, a sports family.
He did say a sports family,
which is so very mysterious to me.
It is mysterious, but
like I want to play Clue and figure out who's the family.
I respect the reporting by Joe not name dropping. You know, that's very sensitive information, so that is something that you have to take time with, and when the time comes that will reveal itself. And also, if you know you're here locally, you know, Jared was trying to guess, you know, who it could be, maybe he got it right and we're not going to know. But you know, too, that's okay. And you know, for Vanderbilt, they can look at the portal. You know, I've always looked at the transfer portal, and I've said it on this program, as free agency. And
yes,
they've always, you know, seen people go into the portal that it's going to take about $1 million to grab someone really good that's going to be a good pocket passer for you, that's going to lead your offense. And Vanderbilt, you know, they've been struggling to find someone to lead their program lately. So, and, you know, it's okay if we ended up, you know, not seeing, you know, a prolific player necessarily come in that is, you know, going to catch all the headlines, but they need someone that is on the rise for sure. So I'm just curious to see how Clark responds to being his own defensive coordinator, but also how does he build this team in the quote unquote off season, Junie?
Well, I'm glad that Joe came out with the report that they do have a lot of money that they're going to be working with here, because I think that that's the one way that they can really turn this around. I mean, we've been hearing about all the guys that have put their name into the transfer portal, their top three receivers. And, I mean, London Humphreys, that was a huge hit. But then hearing Will Shepard, you know, their number one receiver for the last couple of years, he's put his name in. Jaden McGowan, he's gone. All three quarterbacks that have, you know, they were kind of going in and out, didn't really stick to one guy. It was supposed to be A.J. Swan, but He wasn't playing very well to begin the year.
Leave. I thought that the quarterbacks would flip over, honestly. I didn't think that they would stay.
But I didn't expect Ken Seals to leave. I thought that they would keep at least one of these guys. But now it's I just don't know how you bounce back. And I like Clark Lee, and a lot of people around here like Clark Lee. And it's really hard to judge a guy and how he's coaching a program. When you're at Vanderbilt, you're in the SEC, your academic standards are so much higher than everybody else. It's so hard to get really good athletes in there because of that aspect of the recruiting process for this school.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting all this money coming in and maybe trying to buy in some players and get some talent coming in, maybe this is the new way that they do that. Because, again, in the James Franklin era, how did they build those contending teams? Yeah. They lowered those standards academically, so some guys that normally wouldn't get into Vanderbilt could, and then they go and change that, and then they're back to the same old program that they were. So they've got to use the format that is college football today, and using this ability to essentially just pay players to come in and be a part of this program, because I don't see another way out of this.
No, you don't, and that's okay, but it's whatever, and we'll see how well he can recruit. You know, you have a good competition with now Derek Mason, by the way. We have to give a quick shout out over to him. I want to say a few things about that hire, which is a great, great move by Middle Tennessee to make a hire like that. And I was, you know, very excited to hear the energy that he brought to his press conference. You know, it's the introductory, I mean, just, hey, this is who I am. But that is what encourages me about that program moving forward. And I would say that that's going to be something that you're going to have to see improve locally, is how many kids go to a team like Vanderbilt, but also how does Derek Mason utilize that program over there as well, and how does he get players to be attracted to his program? Because here's a perspective that I think most kids that grew up here might have of Vanderbilt. The perception is Vanderbilt's not won a whole lot since I've been playing football, so why would I go there?
And I will say this, covering, you know, high school football back in 2022 when we were running the game Blitz on Friday nights, I grew a large understanding of how talented this area truly is. And that's another aspect of this, not only using NIL money and money to get players to want to come here, but also trying to dominate the local recruitment. I mean, there's so many Division I SEC caliber players that are playing right here in Middle Tennessee that Vanderbilt is not taking advantage of. And I feel like if Clark Lea can really get his hand on local kids, getting this money coming in and starting to turn the narrative about this Vanderbilt program over, I think that that's the way that they start to compete again. Because, again, you know, growing up, really, is Vanderbilt that much worse of a program than Kentucky historically, or Missouri, or even years that South Carolina? I mean, there are some years that South Carolina is god-awful. I mean, if Vanderbilt really just goes all in this area and uses their ability to collect money in the NIL and they completely buy into this new college football that we're living in, why not? Why can they not turn this around and turn this into a solid football program, right, to where they're bowl eligible and maybe, you know, not competing for an SEC championship, mm-hmm, I should say, but maybe in that conversation of being in the SEC East at right behind a Georgia or right behind a Tennessee? Like, why can't that be them?
I don't know, and that's a good question. I would be happier just to see some bowl wins, to be honest, with our listeners, is having the bowl appearances. While the bowls are like, yeah, you're not in anything too huge, but it's still postseason play. You know, Tyson Hilton had a lot of conversation about that before he went to a few of his first bowl games with Western when I was up there talking to him about that weekly before they would end up going to these games. They're really happy because think about what that does for some of the guys that they don't get to play football after college.
Yeah.
Some of the seniors or the graduates, that would be their last game ever. So those are some huge games for your program historically. And so I think even looking at the Music City Bowl is one I always loved going to growing up. And so you can make it a special atmosphere. It's not necessarily the college football playoff. It's not, you know, what the BCS used to be a long time ago. But when programs go to a bowl game and it's in a fun city, you know, Dallas is a fun one that, you know, I've seen some games there too. And I mean, look, those are fun atmospheres as well. I went to one bowl game there, and Western played in Dallas the same year that the Preds played in the Cotton Bowl. So that was fun to kind of experience that as well. But I think what you can do for the program is show that you can take a team and make it a positive environment coaching wise and on the field wise, but then also go, you know what, let's make leaders of people through this program, which is something you can still do even though you've only won a couple games. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the way that you could look at it as well if you are joining a team like Vanderbilt, and they're improving their facilities dramatically. Their football stadium is going to look different. That's going to be a new atmosphere as well. It's a historical place here in Nashville, so I'm excited to see what that looks like as well.
All in all, you know, Vanderbilt is the ultimate underdogs, and we're always pulling for the Commodores to you know, shape up their program to be competitive and to try and get into the mix, and especially with Texas and Oklahoma coming into the mm-hmm. SEC, it's only going to get harder.
And
so let's hope that, you know, they can take advantage if this allotment of money from this quote-unquote sports family that Joe Rexroad is claiming that they're getting for the NIL, collective, which I completely trust Joe Rexroad's mm-hmm. reporting on this.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can take advantage and capitalize on that. But coming,
Really quickly, sorry. I just wanted to throw out the bowl history for a little bit of Vanderbilt as well for those that are curious at least. Vanderbilt has not been to a bowl game since 2018. The last time they won a bowl game was 2012 against, let's see, they lost, okay, and then they beat North Carolina State.
NC State.
Yep.
Back in 2012 they did? What bowl
December,
was that?
That was the Music City Bowl.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Right here in the hometown. So,
yep.
Again, hopefully Vanderbilt can kind of shape things out. We did miss C.J. Taylor today. It happens from time to time. We'll try and reschedule with him to get some more insight on Vanderbilt and what's going on with the transfer portal and what's the future of this program. So hopefully we can get him on at another time. But coming up next, we're going to put a bow on things, make some weekend picks, Army-Navy, some big games in the NFL, Eagles-Cowboys, and also Titans Monday Night Football in Miami. We're going to give our picks for the weekend to cap things off on the show. You're listening to Riddle and the Reporter, Junior Riddle, Nick Keyser here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Final segment of the day here on Riddle and the Reporter, Junior Riddle, Nick Keyser, Connor Newt behind the glass. It's time for weekend picks here on the show. And what better way to kick it off on the weekend with little to no college football, with the only game that is going to be on. It is Army versus Navy, one of my favorite games of the year. And I know a lot of modern football fans don't think that because of how slow pace and it's a lot of running, not a lot of passing game, but I love it. It is football at its finest.
Absolutely.
It is down to the core of it, to me, how the game should be played.
Yes.
And it is always refreshing to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a great American sport with two great American branches of the military.
And I love like all the men and women in uniform
the
game and how passionate they get about it. But at the end of the day, we're all on the same team. We're all Americans and everybody shakes hands and has a beer after
Sean McDermott.
I love it. I love this game. I love what it stands for. Man. And I watch it every single year. It is fantastic. And I'm glad that it gets its own weekend. So let's make our picks.
Yeah.
Nick, kick us off. Army-Navy. Army is favored by 2.5 points.
If this was Army and Air Force, I'd have a lot bigger of an issue because my dad is Army. My stepmother is in the Air Force. But my dad and I usually watch this game, and we always cheer for Army. And Army is a 2.5-point favorite. I would like to see Army win this one. It's kind of been back and forth the last couple of years, which has been fun to watch. And so last year they played at the Giants Stadium over there at MetLife. So that was fun. So I love watching these games with my family. But give me Army. I feel like they would be a great winner in this matchup.
Okay, Connor, who you got? Armed Forces Bowl.
I'm going to go Army as well. Listen, I don't know too terribly much about either team. I'm not an Army football savant. But they are favored, and I like their uniforms in this game.
I think the Navy coach got a different job, or he retired, right, last year? I think that's right because it was his last game last year.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I have no idea. The only time I ever watch these two teams is when they play. I'm gonna be quietly frank. But
all good. All
my
good.
Uncle Tommy, who's Special Forces over at Fort Campbell, he retired back in 2016.
Nice.
He has always made me root for Army in this game, and I will continue to do so. I think they're the better team and the better branch.
Okay.
So give me Army. Make it 3-for-3. They're going to cover. They're going to win by a field goal. 19-16, Army wins this game. All right. Next game, and likely, I think, the game of the week.
Oh, yeah.
You could argue. Eagles at the Cowboys. Cowboys are favored by 3.5 points. Going to be a big one to decide seeding in the NFC. Nick, who you got?
This is a good game. I'm really pumped for this one, and this could be a clear indication of who the better team would be moving forward and who the MVP might be after a game like this. You never know because of Patrick Mahomes and then Jalen Hurts and also Dak Prescott turning things around. I think he has 22 touchdowns in his last 7 games or something like that.
Dak has been having one of his better seasons,
Dak,
for sure.
Yeah, and I don't think Dak will win MVP, to be honest. I don't think he will, but he is playing that way. He's playing great. But give me the Eagles. I think the Eagles bounce back with the Fury. They've not played well the last few weeks, and I think that they'll be motivated on the road as well to kind of start turning things around because they do have 10 wins on the season, right? So should be interesting to see how they approach Dak Prescott on defense as well.
Okay. Who do you got, Connor? Cowboys, Eagles.
The Cowboys at home, man, they have not been beaten this year, have they?
They haven't. I mean, no. They have not lost at AT&T Stadium since week one last year.
Wow.
Against the Buccaneers, I believe.
Wow.
So it's been
a while. That's my thing. Who have they played at home that's been a worthy challenger? Other than the Seahawks last week.
And then last year when they played the Eagles were without Jalen Hurts.
They were without him. Yeah,
that was with Gardner Minshew. And it was still a shootout kind of game. Yeah.
That's where my head's at. I feel like the Cowboys haven't really been challenged this year by a true contender. So I'm going to go Eagles as well. I think this will really be a defensive battle, I feel like.
Really?
Both defenses are really, really good. But ultimately, I think, you know, the Eagles have more of an explosive offense. I feel like Jalen Hurts is kind of the X factor for Philadelphia.
Yes.
So give me the Eagles.
So give me Cowboys on the money line. I think the Cowboys win, but with the hook, the 3.5, I would put the Eagles on the spread. So give me the Eagles on the spread, the plus 3.5, but I think the Cowboys win this game outright. All right, final game of the weekend. It is our game right here in town. Going to be played in Miami at Hard Rock Stadium. Titans plus 13.5 against the Dolphins on the road on Monday Night Football. Nick, what do you think? Do you like the Titans with the points? Is this a game?
No.
Vrabel gets the boys up. They cover.
There's not going to be a Vrabel special, so don't worry about that. Give me the Dolphins and Tyreek Hill. I agree with Derek Mason, 200-yard game.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a called shot. 200-yard gain?
At least.
Whew. Okay.
I think he's going to toast the Titans defense. Well, Connor, how about you?
At least we can go to bed early.
Yeah.
What do I usually say about the Titans when we have odds like this?
We know what you say. Go ahead.
The Titans are going to tighten. They're not going to tighten this time. It's not going to be close. It's not going to be pretty.
I was like, are you really going to pick up on the points spread?
No, it's not going to be pretty. I can't see the Titans scoring over 10 points. So, I mean, give me the Dolphins. I'll say 31-10.
All right.
Listen, I really want to pick the Titans. I think this is a lot of points to be playing with. But offense, defense, just the way these two teams match up. Miami's going to get a lot of pressure on Will Levis. We know that they can stop the run. You know, look at that injury report, because if they got Wilkins and Jerome Baker in there, it's going to make it even harder for Derrick Henry and company to get the ground game going.
Yep.
And this secondary against Tyreek Hill and Tua. Oh, yeah. Goodness. Yep, make it 3-for-3. Dolphins big. It's going to be a tough stretch down the rest of the season for the Titans. A lot of tough games going, but all in all, hopefully it turns into a good draft pick.
And stay safe out there, folks. It's supposed to be stormy out there. Just want to throw that out there. So be safe this weekend, and we'll see how the Titans do Monday.
All in all, Predators take on the Toronto Maple Leafs right here on 102.5 The Game. Pre-game kicks off at 5 p.m., but that's all the time that we have. Riddle the Reporter, we are out.